We sank a snow cap up to the floorboards a couple years ago. It's awesome.
Yeah.
I think we had 2-inch cats and a third cat just to pull it out. It was spectacular. We ordered pizza. We had a great time. That's what makes it fun. I love those years. I've been here for several of them, and they really are the most fun.
What's up, A-Basin faithful, and welcome to a brand new show called Good Morning Arapahoe Basin, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of your favorite ski area to bring you the voices and the stories that make us the legend.
Good morning, Arapahoe Basin. This is WRDF 424. Please stand by for your morning update.
I'm Catherine Fuller, back with my co-host, Jesse True.
Hello.
Together, we are 2/6 of the A-Basin Marketing Department, and today we're coming to you live from the month of May. That means we are full on into spring skiing, and we still have a few weeks left because we plan to go all the way into June. And that's what this episode is all about, spring skiing, spring snow, and spring terrain management. The biggest question I get this time of year is, when is closing day? And we legitimately do not know. We don't announce closing dates ahead of time, and we'll pretty much take the winter season all the way down to one lift and one run. So, Jesse, you've worked for most of our big ski area neighbors. The way we do things without pre-announcing a date is kind of not normal. That's not really how a lot of ski areas do things. It's also probably not the easiest way to go about running this business. Everybody sets dates, they stick to them. Maybe if the snow's amazing, they'll add a few extra weekends. Talk about how that works, why that's the standard, and why we do it our way.
The standard is built for several reasons. One, many of our resort competitors and neighbors are building their season off several things. First and foremost, when skiers and riders stop skiing and riding to a certain extent, everybody's got a certain break-even point at which they have to have a certain number of skiers here or at their resorts skiing and riding in order to make it make sense. Many ski areas, larger ones than us, start shutting down certain pods of terrain in order to save costs, close things down. Some certainly get affected by sun. If you have a south-facing bowl, as an example, that'll certainly close earlier. But I think the big difference between the way that we do it and the way that others do it is really sort of key to who we are. And that is, as long as the skiing is good, we're going to operate skiing and riding here at the Basin. This place with the longest season around has a sort of year-round mindset with a very, very little break in between. And it sort of goes back to that fundamental decision-making ethos of, is it good for skiing? Are our people going to continue to come? And I do think that is something about the culture here. People do love to ski and ride.
Yeah, this is really, to me, proof of concept. We talk a lot about making decisions for the good of skiing. And sometimes when we keep saying that over and over, that we make decisions for the good of skiing, especially coming from us, it can kind of feel like marketing speak. But this is legitimately doing something just so that we can ski and ride.
Absolutely. I think proof of concept is a really good term for that. I do think there are a couple of other proof of concepts. We are replacing a lift this year, which we've done a number of in recent years. But we're putting a six-pack in place of Lenawee because it is the only place that there seems to be a pinch point on this mountain on a busy day. We replaced Polly with a two-person chair. Fixed grip double, they don't get done that often anymore. And so as we start to think about, you know, what are those foundational things we use to make decisions, the good of skiing is consistently there. And I understand when you and I say it, and it does sound like marketing speak, but the proof of concept, the actions that the Basin takes, I think are really important.
Another part of this, and part of the A-Basin mystique, is that we could stay open until the 4th of July. If the conditions allow, we are both able and very willing to make it happen. We already have the longest ski and ride season in Colorado, usually October to June, and we've made it to July 7 times in our history, most recently in 2019. It's part of who we are, and ultimately, I'll say it again, it's about the skiing.
I think there are other pieces to that. You know, as I sit and think about the culture of spring skiing at the basin and how the vibe, as we so endearingly call it, changes in the spring, the beach sort of becomes much more popular as it gets warmer, the sun pops out, the costumes come out even more. I mean, your favorite piece of attire, jorts, come out left and right. Yes. I've never seen so many.
Yes.
If you think you're going to come and stand out by skiing in jeans at the basin, I say with a big smile, that's not the case. It's here every day, all day. And so I think part of the culture and part of, forgive me for more marketing speak, part of the brand is that irreverence and that just having fun. And you don't have to ski all day when it gets to May and June. You can ski a few runs and then you have a really good time with your friends and family.
I live for spring skiing. I was going to bring up the jorts. My favorite thing to do is go out on a warm afternoon and ski slush bumps in jeans and then sit on the deck of the Six Alley, have a beer in that beautiful, warm, late afternoon light, listen to live music. What do you love about spring skiing?
Well, I'm not a jort wearer, so I can't say jorts. I do love the actual skiing slush bumps. The high alpine here stays really good. And when you hit that perfect time of the day and it starts to corn up and the snow is unbelievable, it's not a powder day, but it's a very close second. And so I love that part. And I do love the camaraderie that comes with after a very long winter in Summit County with certainly sunny days, but some cold ones as well. It's nice to hang out when it's warm and have a baseball hat and sunglasses on the deck instead of being hunkered down. So that's certainly sort of coming out of the winter is a big celebration for us that that live here and that recreate here.
I want to turn now to how all of this works. We are going to talk adventures in spring terrain management with Lou Dog and Sunshine. Lou Dog is Louis Scovera, one of our mountain operations directors, and Sunshine is Ryan Avanzik, our ski patrol director. They have each been here for more than 20 years and know this place through and through. Ryan and Louis, thank you for joining us. I'm going to start with you, Ryan. You were actually our snow safety director for many years prior to being our ski patrol director. Talk about our location and our conditions and how that enables us to have a long season. I think sometimes people get wrapped up in total annual snowfall numbers, but that's really not a complete picture at all.
No, we rely on a lot of other different factors or variables. Obviously, our altitude helps. Our base area is over 10,000 feet. And our summit elevation for our patrol shack is at 12,450 feet. And we hike or have hiking for our guests all the way up to almost 13,000 feet. And a majority, or I should say a third of our terrain is north facing. You know, even on an average or a below average snowfall year, we can stay open into June. I think that a lot of snowfall and temperatures and our altitude, all of that really has to do with the timing of when the snow falls. And it's an entire season, the timing of when we get snows as to how it really works.
Louis, talk about the work your team does to kind of support Mother Nature. And I think, you know, snowmaking is one good example. That actually plays a big role to what's happening now, but also the work y'all do with those wooden fences people see out on the mountain.
Yeah, we could have a whole separate podcast on snow fencing if you want.
We'll consider it.
Yeah. We'll see how people geek out on this. So our snowmaking team, led by Bill LeClaire, really, they're working all summer. Late summer, early fall, so into September, we start setting the guns out, testing the equipment. Typically, it's late September that we start getting the temps to start actually producing snow. This does a couple things for us. It allows us to get open early, reliably. And really, for what we're doing here, we need a good week or two of snowmaking weather to get open. So that snowmaking obviously gets us open early, reliably. And then, yeah, Catherine, what you're talking about, it gives us this base, this durable, machined base that lasts. So it's really good early season, and then it's poking its head out again now. And natural snow can just melt out. That man-made, that machined snow can hang in there a lot better. So especially like Ryan was saying, as we get into late May, early June, and then into July. You're skiing man-made. It's a huge breakthrough. We are not doing what we do here year in and year out without snowmaking. Shifting gears to the snow fencing, that's a really long conversation, one that I can nerd out on. We have over 2 miles of permanent snow fence built here at the ski area that we put out manually. We've been experimenting with some cat movable fences. Really cool stuff. The wind is transporting the snow, and we basically create these big barriers that disrupt the wind pattern, and the snow deposits on the leeward side of these snow fences. So if you ever look at a snow fence, you picture where the wind is coming from, typically zonal flow, typically from the west. That snow is carried by the wind, hits that snow fence, and sort of eddies out on the leeward side. So we think about where we want the snow to stick around, either in place or good windy spots that we know we can harvest a lot of snow from and then move it with the snowcats. A year like this, where we're having a below average snowfall year, I wonder if we're skiing in Zoomable this year, if it's not for snow fencing. It's transformative, and we've gotten really good at this. This is generations now of ski patrollers and slopes maintenance people that have figured this out here at the basin. We're very proud of what we do. We think we do it very well.
So Ryan, this being spring and we are talking about snow, talk to us about the conditions. What's different about the snow surface and the snow that falls this time of year?
You know, a lot of our snow and our base snow and how long it sticks around kind of depends on the timing and when it falls during the season. And, you know, we would have preferred, like Louie was saying, we're in a below average snow year. We would have preferred to have that snow pretty much, you know, our April, May snow. We would have preferred to have it back in February, March, which were really dry months for us. When snow falls during that time period, for example, it really contributes to our base height. And when we get it this time of year, snow falls, it settles really fast, it sublimates, it evaporates. And before you know it, you know, the 9 inches that we've gotten over the last 3 days is almost going to be unnoticeable here by the end of today. That's really what plays into it. And this time of year, one of the nice things about the snow, even though it can go away fairly quickly, is that it skis really well. We can have that, you know, typical light, dense, powdery Colorado snow in the morning. And then as it transitions slowly into the afternoon with warm sun, it can get soft. It can get it's trending towards getting heavier, but there's a window in there where the skiing is really quite good.
So you kind of went there a little bit, but a lot of work is done in the spring that's kind of unique as far as assessing this terrain and managing it. Louie, I'll kick it back to you because your team's actually heavily involved in assessing conditions. And I want to talk a little bit about what the groomers are doing at night. You know, they're not just laying down the corduroy, but they're actively helping us make terrain decisions. They're reading the terrain and they're coming back and letting us know, hey, we may have a week left on this. So what are they experiencing? Talk through what a spring night is like for those guys out there. What are they doing and what are they learning?
We're all playing a hand in this on the operations team. Ryan and his team are primarily focused off-piste, the steeper terrain, you know, of which we have plenty. The groomers this time of year, we're really focused on the piste, so where the machines go. And in every zone on the mountain, we have a little bit of both. So Ryan and I are talking, we're all talking, the whole group's talking about what goes when. The timing really matters for the groomers. If you come in at the end of a warm, sunny day and start grooming, it's going to be sloppy. It's going to be messy. You're going to have to double pass things. You're going to have to go really slow. These machines do really well, but the conditions can make things challenging. So there are timing elements here where we think things through and we say, hey, maybe you should start out in the beavers tonight, then come back to the lower mountain as things cool down. So that's going on. What the feedback we get from our night crew in the morning, just this morning, another good example is, hey, where were you falling through? So these guys are cruising around in big, heavy machines. And you've experienced this on your skis before, but where you get that trap door in the spring and you're skiing along and all of a sudden the bottom falls out on you a foot. As you might imagine, when you're in a big, heavy machine, that's exacerbated. So we get feedback from those folks, from our night crew, on what they were experiencing. Where were you finding the soft spots? This time of year as well, like Ryan's talking about, things are melting. there is water running underneath our snowpack. And there comes a point where that's not stable anymore. And we're going to start to see that here in the next couple of weeks. So we ask for that feedback. We talk about areas where we should stop traveling. There is a time at which, you know, and Zuma is a really good example of that right now, we don't have a ton of snow to work with. Everything's getting shallow, and we get to a point where we're not helping the skiing product with the machines. And we just simply have to say, hey, we're done going there. And we'll ride it out. The patrol will make a call on this, but we'll ride out a spot and say, okay, it's not groomed, but it's skiing just fine. We'll ride that out for however long we can. And there comes a point where collectively we say, hey, this zone is done. You know, the other thing our groomers are doing this time of year, so where we find that places are really deteriorating and we're walking away from, we'll go through and we'll harvest all the snow we can and pile it up to move it somewhere else. Bottom of Zuma, we're done with the hike back terrain. There is snow down there on that road. Let's bring that snow up, stage it for the maze so we can keep the maze alive longer. Water running underneath the snowpack, there comes a time where we have to let that water go. We need to let it drain, so we sort of uncork spots at the bottom of water bars specifically. You'll see us late seasons always opening up the sides of runs. That's the point, is we're trying to free up those water bars and allow the water to go where it wants to and not start saturating the snowpack. So we've gotten better. I feel like we've gotten better every year. We have new spots every year that we discover and say, hey, let's go there now and not wait too long, because there comes a point where we can't get that snow.
So Ryan Louie kind of alluded to this, but during the day, terrain management really is ski patrol's world. Talk us through, what's a spring day like for a patroller who's out there helping us manage terrain and make decisions about opening and closing?
It's up to us to go out there every morning on all the terrain that's open to assess it and figure out on a day-by-day basis as to whether or not it's going to be open. Just to echo a little bit about what Louie's talking about, snow fences, for example, are strategically placed so that we can access large parts of terrain. Like Louis said, like Zuma Bowl, for example, might not be open if you didn't have certain permanent fences to allow you to get there. As things deteriorate, it works in the same vein, in the sense that we go out there in the morning and cab drivers tell us this time of year, they're not gonna groom that anymore. So that area is gonna have to go away. That strategic place where we try to keep snow this time of year is going to go away due to the temperatures and the sunshine. And so when that small piece of terrain goes away, that's your only avenue to access a chair, for example. So that means that all the large terrain and all of it behind it goes away as well. So it really cuts back on your access. And so that's what we do as patrollers in the morning. With the collective approach with Louie's team, the cat drivers, they tell us, for example, they're not going to groom the North Finger anymore, or they're not going to groom Davis anymore, because the cats are having trouble getting a good surface there, or the snow's so shallow that they can't actually drive there. You don't want to screw up the tundra. When that happens, it gives us as patrollers in the morning an option to go out there and assess that piece of terrain and go, hey, can we open this to the public or can we not? In the morning, this time of year, it could be frozen coral and it could be extremely difficult and hard to ski. A lot of that depends on what aspect it's on and how much exposure it's had over the day prior to radiation from the sun and what the temperatures did overnight. You know, if it's a cloudy night, it might not have evaporative cooling, for example, so the snow can stay quite soft when we go out in the morning. Whereas if it's a real clear night, even if temperatures are warm, it can still freeze the snow surface. And certain parts of our terrain, we give it a little bit of time, let it warm up a little bit, especially in some steep, you know, real challenging double black diamond expert terrain. You know, we want to make sure that that has an opportunity to soften up a little bit, let the sun hit it for a little bit so that the skiing's really good. Unfortunately, the skiing's only good for a short period of time. And then it can start to get soft. And like Louie was saying, we have to account for water running through the snowpack.
So you mentioned certain areas of terrain might be good for only a couple of hours of the day. And we do do that. We will open and close terrain.
Mm-hmm. It's very dynamic.
Yeah. So that seems like a lot of work for you guys. Why do we do that as opposed to just saying, okay, this area of terrain is done?
You know, I think one of the benefits that A Basin has is we have just under 1,500 acres of terrain. We don't have a ton of chairs. And I think that's actually a nice feature. But I think the downside to that is that we have a chair that accesses a lot of terrain. And so, you know, depending on what aspect you're skiing, we have aspects and skiable aspects on just about every part of the compass. And depending on where you are, certain parts of terrain, certain times of day, you know, we don't want to eliminate an entire chair or an entire bowl from somebody. So we really try to, you know, separate out pieces as best we can to give people and give our customers as much ski terrain as we can. That's this time of year. If you take it back into the fall, that's our motivator as patrollers. We want to get terrain open and we want to give the terrain to the people. Our patrollers, that's what drives them. I would say on a daily basis, that is one of my most common conversations with patrollers. I think this is ready. Let's get this open. You know, let's run ropes over here so that we can move into this piece of terrain. It requires a lot of work, but at the same time, like, that's what we do.
The whole team takes a ton of pride in that.
Yeah.
It's a patrol thing. It's a mountain ops thing. That is what makes us different. We have the ability to be nimble and give as much skiing to our guests as we can safely. That's on, like Ryan said, on both ends of the season. That is the driver here. That's a big part of the value proposition to our guests. That's what we do. And
yeah,
it is absolutely the motivator for all the guys and gals that we work with.
The juice is worth the squeeze, we say.
It's got to be. To be nimble enough like we are for the reasons that Ryan said, that's huge. And we will make it last as long as we can.
I think the combination of, you know, snowmaking, snow fencing, snow farming with those fences, our patrol, you know, managing all this terrain, I think that one of the things that gets us to where we are and why we have the reputation that we have. And I think part of that reputation is people going, how late will A Basin stay open this year, right?
Absolutely.
The question being asked is part of that reputation. All these factors that we've been just talking about, what the timing of storms and how they fall over the course of a season, you know, getting into the late season, our aspect, our altitude, all that can really put us into this time of year where we're not quite sure how late we can go. You know, what's May going to deliver for us moving forward? Is it going to stay cold and snowy? Are we going to be in, you know, just continuous unsettled weather through the rest of May? But we also might see, you know, really hot conditions and water starting to run and have to see how it goes.
But it all comes back to the skiing.
Yes,
if the skiing is worth it, we'll keep doing it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, since you mentioned seeing how far we can go, I do want to bring up 4th of July. It seems like we're fairly certain it won't be happening this year.
Correct.
The most recent season we stayed open that late was 2019. And we were discussing earlier, it's part of our mystique that when the winter starts, there's always the possibility. You can always hope for it. What do you guys remember about 2019 and sort of how that decision was made and what the conditions were that allowed us to actually do that?
Well, I don't remember the numbers by any means. Gosh, that's a highlight for us as a team, for sure, to be able to make it that far. Ryan used the word dynamic. Every day you get a hunch as to what's going to happen, but you're surprised. And you have to react and hope that you have the right people here with the right know-how to react appropriately. We're very fortunate on our groomer side. We have three guys who've been here for 40 plus years apiece. Gary Dorsey, Dick Dreyer, Scott Buell. These guys know the mountain better than any of us. They know where the snow is and isn't. They know where those rocks are. Man, it's just pulling snow from where you don't need it and putting it where you need it. It's who we are. Pushing the season as long as we can. And then every several years, every 5-6 years, whatever it is, having that payoff of pulling it off and getting to the fourth, it's a real motivator for the staff. And there can be some sloggy days there in the spring. But knowing that you might be able to make it that far is super cool and super fun. Costumes and people partying. It's, I don't know. That's,
oh yeah.
Isn't that why we're here?
It's very hedonistic. we, you know, it's funny to
continue on Louis's point, I remember the 2019 time frame, and it really was a week by week thing. You know, I remember talking with Louis and, you know, my boss, and talking amongst other people among, you know, within our operation, and trying to figure out, you know, can we go another week? You know, can we go another 2 weeks? And slowly July 4th becomes, you know, obtainable. And then it becomes, you know, like we can pull it off this year.
That's what I remember were the staff meetings.
Yeah.
And the energy level in May can sometimes get a little low.
Yeah.
It's been a long season. We're starting to think about rafting trips and mountain biking. And then all of a sudden, that was the conversation. And everybody was so excited and rooting for it and just pumped, like, oh my gosh, I think we can make it happen.
Oh, it's super cool. You know, we're all in different positions now, and now being at the table with Ryan and a bunch of others making these decisions, you're definitely sticking your neck out there a little bit. And there is some anxiety associated with that. I remember, now that you just got me thinking about that, but I remember that last, okay, we can make it one more week. We can make it one more week. Okay, we can make it one more week. And I remember the last time, you know, the week leading up to the 4th, being like, yeah, I think we got this. And there are plenty of people to bounce those ideas off of. It's not any one of us. I remember walking out of that meeting after committing to the 4th, and marketing started pushing out the message, and thinking like, oh my God, what have we done here? I'm not sure we could do this at all. On the 4th of July, I remember this vividly. I was helping the groomers, you know, coming in the middle of the night, probably came in at 1 a.m. or something, start grooming. And I remember 2 hours before opening, going down High Noon, our remaining trail, right below the Twins, right below the High Noon Ramrod split. And one of those water bars exploded on us. And it was like a river going down the skiable product. And this was at 5 a.m. or something, and just panicking, like, whoa, what are we going to do about this? How can we fix this? And Scott Buell was with me. He pulled it off, thank goodness. But, man, it's such a great, it's the best. It's super cool. Again, something that we can do that very few others can pull off. And that's what we're slinging here. That's what we're doing.
And I do think for a lot of people, being able to ski in the summer, especially when we make it that far to technically the first day of summer, is kind of a cool thing. We have a lot of people who they'll go mountain biking in the morning or rock climbing in the morning, and then they come here and get a few runs in the afternoon. And it's just highlights what's so special about living here too.
Just as an aside, I was ticket checking the other day, and I was witnessing these folks come through, yes, all in denim and wigs, who were counting runs. And I started to key into the fact that they were after the Colorado Triathlon. 9 runs, 9 holes, and 9 innings, all in one day. And they were having the time of their lives. I think it's part of the mystique of the basin is being able to go that long and be able to do the sort of multi-sport day that we often talk about.
Okay, one more question. Is it true that if you ski naked, you will lose your pass?
You're probably asking the wrong two guys here.
I'm just trying to come up with some practical consumer advice for spring skiing at A-Basin.
Don't put it down. If you're going to ski naked, don't crash on this snow surface.
Yeah,
that is gonna
bad
hurt.
Idea.
There's some practical advice for you.
Maybe
sunscreen? Were you going to say sunscreen?
I was going to say stay in the trees.
Stay in the trees?
Yes, we have tree-gladed skiing.
It's like a lot of things. Be conscious of your surroundings. You see a family sitting there enjoying some barbecue on the BML deck. Maybe cover yourself up.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. How do we... I'm not... What's the right answer here?
Hard to
yes.
be diplomatic.
The answer would be yes. Ski naked, lose pass.
Yeah. Okay.
That's not that.
That is Jesse True,
on paper the way that we're supposed to do it.
Yeah. We frown upon that.
There you go.
There you go. Yeah.
It's warm, but not that
warm. Can you cut
the
rest of that? Yeah. Can you cut the rest of the hemming and hawing there?
Well, there you have it. Thank you, Louis and Ryan, for joining us. It was a pleasure, and I'm sure we'll have you back to talk about snow fencing.
Right on. Please do. Yeah. Pencil.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having us.
Your parents would be so proud.
Yeah, exactly. We made it.
Yeah, you guys made it. Well done. don't think we can offer an ending better than that, so we will not try. Thank you for listening, and don't forget to check out our terrain status before you come visit us for spring skiing and riding, as things change quickly. One more reminder, we will be releasing a new episode of Good Morning Arapaho Basin about every 2 weeks, so send us your questions, and they just might make up the basis of a future show.
Have a good day out there, and remember your sunscreen.